Welcome to Climate Matters. I am Peter Savio, and I'm here interviewing a good friend, Michael Corso. Welcome, Michael.
Hi, Pete. Thank you.
Hey, this is the segment in a series of podcasts that we've started in 2020, this time looking at utility regulation. And for a lot of people, that might seem like a boring or humdrum topic. But when Michael Corso is here, you will think differently. So we talked last time about the fact that Michael has been a thought leader at the Department of Public Service in New York and the Public Service Commission around issues regarding electric deregulation, around consumer protection, around utility low-income energy efficiency programs. In this segment, we're going to start jumping into the consumer protection aspect. But before we do, Michael, tell us a little bit more. What does the Public Service Commission do, and what was your role there?
Okay. The Public Service Commission really, and you boil it down, has two functions. The first is to set rates, and the second is to take complaints. And resolving those two matters is an abundance of work, which is getting much more complicated over time due to policy development and technology changes. And we have found our way to getting better at some things and finding that others are a bit more complicated. But I will say this, I was there 34 years to the day, and I never had a boring day.
We're going to ask you to translate that. So give us an example of what some of the high points were, Michael, in terms of or were there just regular high points too tough to count?
I would say the latter, Pete. The work was so interesting and different every day that I can give highlights of functions or highlights of successes that the commission had. But the most important thing was that we were constantly searching for goals that were higher than we were sitting at currently. So we were always stretching and always achieving more and more and more as we continue to develop public policy on energy, especially since energy has become such a different thing to people than it once was. When I was a little boy, I remember gasoline, as an example, was 24 cents a gallon, and now it's over 250 a gallon, and at times in our life, it was 450 a gallon. That changes the dynamic on a whole bunch of things, but if you think about it, the economy is completely affected by one thing in this regard, and that is the cost of energy. And those things changed quite a bit over time.
Right, absolutely. And I'll continue to weave in, absolutely true, the economy, also the environment, and particularly related to climate change and some differential impacts electricity production, differential in terms of burdens, differential in terms of benefits. So clearly it's a highly consequential role. The Public Service Commission serves a highly consequential role in looking at it from that perspective. So Michael, in terms of consumer protection, if we get back to that, how is consumer protection, give us a kind of a snapshot of how that gets played out in terms of how utility rates are set and how complaints are addressed?
Pretty much complicated.
It,
yeah, well, I don't know where to start. Well, let me just say this. The real opening of consumer protection happened in 1981, when in the year previous, a couple in Schenectady, New York, were found dead from exposure because they didn't have utility service. They didn't pay a bill, about $65, and the utility terminated their service. And I understand, and many people do, if you don't pay, you can't have the service. But energy is an incredibly required, necessary service. It is not like buying jelly beans. So consumer advocates came around and fought very hard against the PSC and against the government in general, and they formulated a plan, and eventually it got written out and it became law. And that is called HEFPA, HEFPA, the Home Energy Fair Practices Act. And basically, it was a set of rules that require utilities to give proper and adequate notice so that consumers have a chance to pay a bill or seek assistance, public assistance, to pay the bill so they avoid termination of service. So it's very hard to terminate service in New York State, and there are downsides to it, but the upside is way less people lose their service and consequentially die. And that doesn't happen like it used to. It's very infrequent that people lose energy service for not paying a bill, and then they have consequences.
So kind of a direct illustration of a policy change and the consequences before and after that policy change. Mm-hmm. Pretty amazing.
I came to the commission in 1986, and we were still ramping up HEFPA. It takes a long time to implement a massive law and regulations associated with that law. And when I came in 86, we were still doing it, and we were partnering with social services, where we were not really working with them before I arrived. One of the things I started to do because of a letter of complaint was to bridge communications and activities between the state agencies, the Public Service Commission, and the Department of Social Services.
Again, kind of illustrating this notion that energy is integral to so many other societal functions, government services in this case, but the real consequences for all of us as energy consumers.
Yep.
So in terms of the consumer protection interests, where do they sit and how are they balanced against, say, there's a clear priority in terms of electric reliability. There's a clear priority in terms of keeping rates as low as possible and addressing affordability. There are many other priorities around climate and energy efficiency. Where does consumer protection fit in that framework, and how does that balancing act play out?
So I would describe it as, prior to 1981, it was virtually not there. After and it was de facto there, but not formally. After 81 to, let's say, the teens, 20-teens, it grew. Protections, consumer protections, and advocates came out, started forming organizations, and then large organizations took energy on as a segment of their work. Best example I can give is AARP. AARP has become a very strong consumer advocate in the field of energy, and at one time, it wasn't even on the radar screen for them. There was so much concern about price spikes and issues associated with consumers, particularly low-income consumers, not being treated fairly, and raising rates that were, on average, not so bad, but to people who are lower income and middle income, it was bad, and there was no real advocacy for that. It got further developed, and then finally, in 2013, the commission realized it needed much more support in this area, so it created a consumer advocate position in the agency. And they said that there needs to be liaison communication, there needs to be open policy development and inclusion. And they appointed me to be the first consumer advocate at the department in 2013. And I left in 2018, and I'm not sure where it is now. But it has changed the course of mighty rivers, because I would say the balance point, Pete, now is that they are equal players to business. And that is a really success story, because they weren't getting fair shake at all. And it developed to a point where now they're big players. The low income has a voice at the table in a big way, thanks to PULP, the Public Utility Law Project, AERP, et cetera.
Wonderful. So we are here with Michael Corso, and we've been discussing the Public Service Commission and the kinds of connections that a lot of people may not realize, the roles that are played there, the consequences. It's a great example, Michael, as you describe it, of PULP and AERP helping influence policy and the government responding with a stronger institutional presence. Really appreciate having Michael Corso here on Climate Matters. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Pete.